Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Welcome back, Fred. I think we'll finish the Origin of Fish show on another program because we've got so much news to talk about.
There's a lot of stuff. But Bob, I'm kind of wondering, is your head shrinking?
My head?
I'm looking at your head and it looks like it's getting smaller.
Why do you say that? It feels the same.
Well, I got a copy of Answers Magazine and there's an article in here about our brains shrinking to make us smarter.
When they look at the size of brains, or the skulls really, in human fossils, skulls are smaller, right?
Yeah, they've gotten about 10% smaller over the years.
Evolutionists so often make these storybook assumptions that when our skulls got bigger than, say, a chimp's, that's when we were getting smarter. Does the size of your head correlate to your IQ? People with big heads smarter than people with small heads?
Well, you know, I have a manager, and she's from China.
Mm-hmm. And she used to play on the front four for the Broncos?
No, she didn't. She was not a lineman.
She wasn't?
No.
All right.
She's, you know, rather small and very, very intelligent. She doesn't look like she has a really big skull.
So I went to Arizona State University taking a 400-level computer science course. If there were three or four women from Japan, young, slight, petite women in the class, and the professor graded on a curve, any football players in the class were worried because those gals were going to ace every test. They're just going to ace them. So a little skull and a little brain to go with it versus, say, some big German soccer player, he's not smarter than these petite women.
Yeah, you can't use that correlation.
No.
It's obvious.
Not at all. In fact, there have been examples where, in the news not too long ago, a woman in Europe had a brain tumor, and she didn't know it. She grew up with this, and her brain was only a sliver around her skull. Most of the interior of her head was the tumor.
Wow.
And she lived a normal life. So all of her brain function, we know that if you get part of your brain injured, then the way God made us, it's possible that another part of your brain could be retrained to take over the function that you lost. So this woman had typical intelligence with just a sliver of a brain.
Yeah. And evolutionists, don't they think we've been getting smarter over the years?
They think that.
That's an assumption, more simple to more advanced.
Right.
It's just the whole cartoon thing with evolution. You think of, I don't know, the pyramids come to mind, and they mention it in this article.
Yeah.
That's a pretty amazing feat. We still don't know how they did that.
And that Antikythera mechanism that they discovered on a ship from about 100 BC, you remember that?
Yeah, they discovered it on a sunken ship, and it's a computer. It's essentially a mechanical computer.
In fact, they found this thing in 1901, and they didn't figure out how sophisticated it was or what it did really for decades, but it was designed to calculate astronomical positions. And that's pretty neat from 2,000 years ago. And when you go back, we have the mystery of the ancients, like time, life, mystery of the ancients, because the evolutionists say, well, how'd they do that? They were supposedly crawling out of caves trying to figure out how to light a fire, and they were very sophisticated with math, astronomy, architecture.
Yeah, and if you take a biblical worldview, they would have been smarter than us because they would have had fewer mutations, right? Over time, we pick up slight mutations every generation.
Mm-hmm. Fred, this past week, my son Nathaniel and Scott Evans and I, Keith Mason, a bunch of pro-lifers from the Denver metropolitan area, went down Leslie Hanks to Durango because of a great pro-life event there at Mercy Hospital, trying to get them, it's a Catholic hospital, to kick out an abortionist, Dr. Grossman, who has privileges at this hospital, and he kills children.
Well, his last name's appropriate.
Yes, exactly. He kills kids for a living. While we were there, we went to Mesa Verde with the cliff dwellings, the Ute Indians, the Anastasi, all that story. And Fred, because they're not biblical scholars or even students, they don't understand the rocks and the stone dwellings and the city remains. They don't understand it. We go there as Christians and we feel like we understand it. First of all, they got there about 3,000 years ago or so. That's a perfect timing with the scriptures, the chronology of the Bible. And there were no thousands of years of cities below the cities that we find. That was the beginning. They said, but why would they build these incredible stone cities and then just abandon them? Why? And they said, well, maybe it was a drought, but if it's a drought, then they'd come back. And we know because after the global flood, the water table all over the earth was so high, the groundwater, you dig a well, you got artesian wells, you got natural springs, but the ground level water, the water table, as it recedes, then there's not enough water supply to support about 30,000 people who lived in the Four Corners area. So we know why they all left. The anthropologists, archaeologists,
they're baffled.
They do not know.
Yep. And, you know, we probably are not as intelligent as our distant ancestors.
Right.
Knowledge has increased. So we're not saying that they had better technology back then. Our knowledge has increased, but our intelligence hasn't.
Right.
But evolutionists will have you believe that our intelligence has evolved and improved.
And most scientists say that we only use a sliver of our brains, of our abilities. We use like 10% or whatever the percentage is.
Well, because only 10% of the DNA is functional, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, that's a good point. If that were true, then Darwinism can't explain the development of the human brain, let alone the mind, because it wouldn't evolve excess capacity. It wouldn't make this brain, and we only use a part of it, because it would only make what you needed to survive. Obviously, our brains were created by God. Adam had full capacity, and we have been de-evolving. We haven't been evolving. We've been degenerating.
Well, maybe from an evolutionist point of view, that excess baggage in the brain, maybe that's a leftover vestigial. I think we might be related to the elephants closely, but we'll talk about that shortly.
Yeah, because they're smarter than chimps.
They are.
Hey, Fred, since we're talking about our brains, why don't we go to this Time magazine article real quickly on Albert Einstein. He's the brain of the 20th century. This is a special report from Time magazine, Albert Einstein, The Enduring Legacy. Remember James Nickel? You brought him to Colorado, the guy who wrote the book on mathematics.
Yeah, and he spoke to our group at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. YoungEarth.org is our website.
That's right. He wrote a book, Mathematics Is God Silent? I took a sentence out of this Time magazine special report on Albert Einstein, and I put it in the show summary from a few weeks ago with James Nickel, because this crystallizes what that mathematician was explaining, how the mathematicians, they turn away from their five senses, they turn away from the physical world, and they just think, and they begin to explain how the world works.
So they just think using their brain, and then they write their thoughts down, pen, paper, and brain.
Right. And Einstein said that this was incomprehensible. How is it that ideas should even exist at all, because they're not made of matter or energy? And how is it that math should be able to describe the physical universe so beautifully, so eloquently?
Without observing it.
Without observing, like E equals MC squared. Einstein didn't see that. He didn't smell it. He didn't feel it. He thought it. So here's a sentence. Now that high-precision instruments, such as atomic clocks and lasers, are available to test Einstein's ideas, they have shown that he was absolutely on target with the equations he worked out with nothing more than a pencil.
Wow.
So that is such a good example that the mathematicians make the discoveries before the physicists, before their real-world counterparts. They think it because God thought it, and he made us in his image. So then we're able to discover things without seeing them, just by thinking about them.
And it's mind-boggling to try to figure how that could have evolved.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Right.
Where did that information come from?
Right. I just love it. This article says that when Einstein had a problem to think through, he would grab a violin. He loved to play the violin. You know, Sherlock Holmes did the same thing, I think.
Hmm.
Fred, I think that's an example of the innate intelligence and creativity God put in us. Because some people take a walk. They have a problem. Have you ever done that?
I try to find a quiet place that's kind of dark when I'm working on a really difficult problem at work. It helps. Remove the distractions and just sit there and think.
Well, another way is I sometimes will take a walk, almost like you're distracting your mind.
Oh,
Einstein
okay.
would play a violin. He'd distract himself and come up with the answer. And I found that to be true also. It's like God gave us these incredible abilities, and sometimes we get in the way of accessing them.
And
that's like an idiot savant, too, I think, is another proof against evolution. It's a throwback by accident to abilities we've had in the past.
Wow. Okay, Bob, how about that story about some lady in Texas? Pretty good at math. She won the lottery one time? No, wait, two. She won it two.
Two?
No, wait a minute. Three times.
Multi-million dollars.
Multi-million. She won the lottery four separate times over.
Four times over about a 15-year period. Fred, this one lady.
The only thing I've ever won is an office plant at a Christmas party.
Fred, this lady won, like, each time, $2 million, $4 million, $10 million, $7 million. The same lady in the Texas Lottery Division, the Commission on the Texas Lottery, of course, they have to defend their system. They can't say it's rigged or you can figure it out. They can't say that. Their sales would dry up. So they said, well, she's just very lucky. And there's an article on her that did research on who this woman is, and it turns out she got a degree in mathematics.
Yeah, PhD, right? From Stanford?
From Stanford University.
So that's a little suspicious.
That's a little suspicious. And the odds of her winning a multi-million dollar jackpot four times, they worked it out to be like it might happen once in a septillion years. Septillion. That's a big number.
That's a big number.
Right? What do we have? We have 1,000, million, billion.
And a trillion.
Trillion.
And then quadrillion.
Quadrillion.
And then you're getting somewhere up near a gazillion.
Then we got quintillion.
Yep. Sextillion.
And sextillion. And septillion.
Septillion. Octillion.
Octillion after that.
What's the next one? Novantillion?
Non-tillion. And decillion.
Wow.
And then you got to go. Thanks, Fred.
Yeah.
Then you got to go to Google.
Google?
Eventually.
What about Yahoo?
They're saying that this would only happen, like, forget the universe. It's like the universe, the time they say the universe has been here, 15 billion years or 20, whatever. That's just a drop in the bucket to how long you'd have to be playing the lottery for this to happen four times. It would take a billion, billion, billion universes of time.
Yeah. Didn't they calculate once what the odds were of a simple protein forming?
A single simple protein, and we have thousands of proteins in our bodies, right? And they're like biological machines, and they're made up of amino acids.
Scientists generally say that there's 10 to the 80th power of molecules in the universe.
Or atoms. Right.
That's a huge, huge number. That's the number of, yes, atoms, basically, in the universe, 10 to the 80. And the odds of a protein forming by chance was 10 to the a huge number, like a 10,000 something. I don't remember, but it was astronomical.
Astronomical because you have 100 amino acids or more, and they have to be in a certain order. Then they have to be folded in a precise way.
And they're not even accounting for that.
No, right. This is just to get in the right order to start with.
Yeah.
If the entire universe were a laboratory where every atom was a fully equipped lab to form amino acids into a right protein chain, doing it a million times a second, and the universe was 15 billion years old, you're not going to come up with the first protein. Never mind a DNA and a replication system and a living cell and all that, and the cell wall membrane. Forget all that. Just the first protein. You need trillions of quadrillions of universe age lengths of a supposed 15 billion years to come close to getting one protein molecule. And all you'd have is one dead protein molecule.
And remember, Stephen Hawking said that if you had an infinite number of monkeys, they could type out one of Shakespeare's sonnets.
Right.
And you do the math behind that. And it's
you do you the
could,
math.
You could turn every single atom in the universe
into a type of monkey
that types like a torrid pace, like 500 words a minute or whatever.
Yeah.
And they could type that for the age of the universe, 10 billion universes. And it was something like they could come up with the first 100 letters of one of his sonnets.
Right, right.
That's it.
So the fact that mathematicians will tell us that this woman did not win this lottery by chance. So you start to investigate her, and she has a PhD in statistics from Stanford University. There's more to the story.
Well, you would think, you know, because if she's good at math, then she shouldn't be doing the lottery.
Yeah.
Because they say the lottery is for people who are bad at math.
Yeah, good point.
I don't know if you ever heard Steve Martin say how you make $1 million.
How?
First, you need $1 million. So one way to do that is win a lottery.
Mm. Or you could start with $2 million.
There you go.
So, Fred, why don't we go to this Answers magazine that you mentioned? It's the current edition, July through September 2011, from Ken Ham's ministry, Answers in Genesis. There is a fun story about the blue whale. Wow, I like this story.
Yeah, this one's cool.
Could we talk through it? Because first of all, I'd like the audience to get an idea of how big a blue whale is.
They're huge. Their offspring can average around 25 feet at birth.
At birth?
Wow.
That's like as tall as a telephone pole. That's like a bus. Fred, a full-grown blue whale weighs as much as 30 full-grown elephants. Their mouth is so big, it's big enough to swallow a bus. And they eat tons of food every day. They eat krill.
Krill, right? Yeah. And it says that they can hold a ton of krill in their bodies. And they eat about 4 tons a day.
My wife gets krill oil for us and our kids. She's researched it. She said it's very healthy.
I get it for my saltwater aquarium fish.
Oh, you do? Oh, good, good. So these blue whales... The largest blue whale scientists have measured was 98 feet long. You know the story in the Bible that Jonah was swallowed by a
great fish? Yeah. And
we don't know exactly.
We don't know which kind of fish it was, but this one's a great candidate. A lot of times they dive deep into the ocean, and they take in a ton of air to do that.
They take in a tremendous amount of air. You know, Fred, there was a teacher who said in class— to the kids, she said, now, you know that a whale cannot swallow a person. And so this little precious boy, he said, well, when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask Jonah if it's true or not. And the teacher said, well, what if he isn't there? And the boy said, well, then you could ask him. So the blue whale, these blue whales, they communicate with other blue whales hundreds of miles away, which in and of itself is astounding.
It is.
But there's a special layer of water where they could send and receive messages for 2,000 miles. And Fred, the way they communicate, the frequency they use, if it was a little bit higher, it would get mixed in with the frequency of the waves in the ocean, and so they wouldn't be able to communicate. If their frequency was a little bit lower, it would actually blend in with the sound that comes from the crust of the earth.
Yeah, the earth actually has a sound, right?
The earth has a sound.
So the whales, their sound is just a tad frequency higher than the sound of the earth.
And so if they get right in the right spot between low density and high density water, they could communicate for 2,000 miles. Just imagine if there were no God. If there were no creator God who made these incredible creatures and they were evolving and they had to communicate and they had to hit upon the right frequency. I mean, we've got frequencies for like garage door openers, your cell phones, your shortwave radio, your just everything, TV broadcasts. And what are whales going to keep changing the frequency that they're emitting and receiving on for millions of years until they hit on the right one?
Until they can figure the right one?
It's just...
It's amazing.
It's too much. It's so ridiculous.
It's so fine-tuned, you know? It's so fine-tuned that an alien ship could hear it and they came and was going to destroy the Earth. That's an old Star Trek movie.
And that's not true?
It's not. No, not true.
Okay.
So, Bob, you know, these whales have amazing teeth. Mm. Or are they teeth?
Well, they're not quite teeth. They're called balenes.
Baleen. And they're made out of keratin, which is the same protein that we have in our fingernails, right? It makes it more elastic. Mm-hmm. Well, the blue whale sucks in 15,000 gallons of water.
So really. In one gulp, a blue whale, it's like a pool in your backyard. It's a big pool.
Well, that's a lot of pools.
Right. So 15,000 gallons of water in one gulp, and all the krill is in there.
And all the krill's in there. So how does he get the krill to process it and chew on it
and get rid of the
digest
water?
Digest it and get rid of the water.
How does he do it?
Well, these things we just talked about, this stuff called baleen that's like our fingernails, they're stacked very close together and oriented in such a way that when the water is squeezed through these baleen, that the krill gets stuck in between and then that can process all this fish. There must be a ton of these baleen in the big blue whale.
With all this, I think Jonah would have had plenty of room in the blue whale stomach.
I think he could have had an entertainment center.
I mean, they could swallow a bus. They could swallow a bus.
Easily.
And their heart is the size of a Mini Cooper car. That's like a little two-door, small.
Yeah, really small little car.
Yeah.
The size of its heart. Wow.
Oh, and you know what? Jonah could have even eaten the krill if he wanted to.
Oh, would there be some krill left over?
I guess so. So when Jesus said that Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, the Lord created the fish, and he's aware. He knows what's happening. And that story happened so that it could foretell, it could prefigure the death and then resurrection of Jesus Christ, who was buried for 3 days and three nights and then rose from the dead. So not only is it possible on the authority of Jesus Christ and the scriptures, it did happen, and that poor public school teacher is not going to be able to talk to Jonah because they're not going to live in the same place.
They're not going to live in the same place.
No.
Evolutionists do love to mock this story of Jonah, and here we have ample evidence that it's incredibly plausible. It could easily happen. If it can't, then explain how it can't happen. I challenge them to look at this whale and tell us how a person would not survive in there for 3 days.
Right, and there's also God who wanted Jonah to survive to preach to Nineveh. Jonah wasn't even happy that Nineveh repented.
That's right. He wasn't a thrilled prophet.
No. And you know what's interesting about that, Fred, is that the Bible has this flavor of realism where the prophets, the kings, the patriarchs, the apostles, they all look like losers. They all are so bad, not always, every moment, every one of them, but overwhelmingly, they're so bad. And if they were just making it all up, if the Jews are just making up the story of their history, why not make themselves look good? If the kings are having these things written, the prophets work for the royal court, why not have the nation look great?
Yeah. You know?
But the truth is in the scriptures.
It is in the scriptures. I mean, King David, didn't he commit murder and adultery?
He sure did.
So he's a great man of God. Did God choose to leave out that information out of the Bible? No.
No, not at
and
all.
It's true.
And he was a great history. Man because he did repent.
He did repent of that.
Sadly, it wasn't until he was caught, but he did repent. Yeah. But King Saul was evil, but he wouldn't repent. There's the difference.
That's right.
The humility or not. All right. Hey, Fred, they found more soft tissue.
More soft tissue.
We keep talking about dinosaurs. They're digging up all over the place.
Oh, they found more soft tissue in the fossil record.
In the fossil record. And so far, we've talked about on the show soft tissue from a T-Rex. Right?
T-Rex, yeah. Mosasaur.
A mosasaur.
Allosaur. Hadrosaur.
That's right. And an Archaeopteryx.
Yeah.
Now, this is yet again, Fred, this is a team in England that has confirmed the existence of original biological material in a fossilized lizard. And the material is from the lizard's skin, and it was dug up in the USA.
Yeah, and they found it in layers that were supposedly 40 million years old.
40 million years old in what's called the Green River Formation. Fred, we used to look at mummies from Egypt, and scientists would study them to see how long it would take for biological material to degrade. And they came up with, generally, it was believed, about 10,000 years, because when you have mummies that are 3,000 years old, 3,800 years old, you study them under a microscope, and you see that these are degrading. Well, this team of scientists used very sophisticated laboratory equipment, molecule mapping technology, where they map each molecule, and they determined that there is a protein in this fossil that's the same as the keratin protein in modern lizard skin. So it's not contamination.
Yeah, they can't blame it on molecules contaminating.
Yeah,
they
always try to do that. It's not bacteria, right?
Some form of bacteria has that piece of molecule in it. They come up with all kinds of wild excuses.
They said for 10 years now, it's biofilm.
Yeah.
Some bacteria got in there, but bacteria don't create lizard skin proteins.
Yeah, so it's amazing. How are they going to explain this? This is 40 million years old. There's no way this stuff happened.
A lizard dug into the rock through the strata, rolled around on the fossil, and then put all the rocks back.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say he climbed into a chirogenics chamber or something.
No. Yeah, I'm being silly. These finds are overwhelming proof that this T-Rex was not 65 million years old. It's got blood vessels and blood cells, hemoglobin, proteins. Also, this Archaeopteryx that they say is 150 million years old, and they've got original biological material from all different parts of this Archaeopteryx, all different kinds of tissues in this one fossil. It's not 150 million years old.
No, and as you said earlier, studies have shown that you're lucky to get 10,000 years out of the decomposition. There's no way that these things could be really more than 10,000 years old as far as their own research shows.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's well within the biblical timeline, and it totally refutes millions of years. It's a horrible situation for evolutionists, for old earthers.
I mean, they've hated it for years now, and now it's becoming commonplace. Like, ho-hum, more soft tissue from a dinosaur.
Hey, we didn't get to talk about elephants being smarter than chimps now. Are we evolved from elephants?
We must be, or crows.
Because our heads were bigger. Elephants have big heads.
That's right. Hey, thanks, Fred Williams. Our website, kgub.com. Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, all from our website, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner, on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist? Bob Enyart Debates Atheist Zaketh, a Psychologist. We also have two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist? And then Mount St. Helens, The Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the Earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realsciencefriday.com.